Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we were at Jack's Place for the memorial and a familiar face back in the winner's circle again, just in time. Plus, a lot more LIV Golf gossip from Tiger to Phil to Ricky. The past week was full of drama, and we get to it all as the first event looms. And it's part two of our book club chat on the new scandalous Phil Mickelson book. We get all into Phil, and we're tuned into a viral clip from one of the hosts of the show and a superhero in Batman as well. And this week's guest is a step into Hollywood with a very talented singer and performer that played a once-in-a-lifetime role. We get into that in this week's featured conversation, plus the Celtics championship run rolls on to the finals, and cool-down drinks and Mike's restaurant find when we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. They make the phone caddy. We love the phone caddy. You need one in your life. We talk about it every week because it's important to our game. Whenever we get out on the course, the first thing you do is you get the cart. You're getting ready to start your day, and you got to have your phone in a safe position for the entire day so it's not falling or bouncing around the cart, or even worse, getting run over by a stray tire from a cart. You can prevent all that with the Desert Fox phone caddy, so check out desertfoxgolf.com. Check out their variety of colors, makes, models, designs. You can customize your own on a small scale or for a large event, too. If you're a club that's interested, check out desertfoxgolf.com as well. Our promo code COURSEOFLIFE will save you 10%. Again, promo code COURSEOFLIFE will save you 10% off your phone caddy at desertfoxgolf.com.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Toasty Snacks, and Volvic. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, this was possibly one of the most eventful weeks of golf in a long, long, long time.
Without maybe many shots either, too.
Exactly, exactly. So we'll get into everything here. Let's start, though, with the PGA Tour's Memorial Tournament at Muirfield Village. Jack was on hand, handing out handshakes as usual. Oh, yeah. And the last handshake of the day did go to Billy Horschel, who was able to just kind of run away with this one.
Yeah.
Plopped down that 65 on Saturday and just held on Sunday.
Exactly. It was just basically holding on to the steering wheel all weekend for him. He said he took a page out of not only Jack's playbook, but Tiger's playbook, guys that he knows have played with leads a lot more than he has. And Billy Horschel's got his own set of experience and is a FedEx Cup champion and several times over winner in his own right. But you're always learning when you're winning each time on the PGA Tour. And Horschel had to hold on a unique position, but he got it done. He was solid. I saw him win at the 2021 match play, Mike, beating Scottie Scheffler in the final. That was his last time he was victorious. But he has a knack for just coming around every 12 to 18 months and delivering a very impressive performance. And that's what makes for longevity on the PGA Tour. Billy Horschel is just kind of your model of consistency player that got it done just in time.
Yeah, nothing too flashy or showy, but it was just a great moment to see him and his family and his kids out there on the course
on
Sunday.
The kids were great, great, great kid rush, too. They were very excited. I think the kids won some sort of like trip to Disney World or like gigantic toy because the celebration was like almost a bit much how excited they were for dad's win. So he seemed just excited as them as well.
Let's talk about our picks through the weekend as well. Will Zalatoris was on my list. He finished at closest to the top at 6 under, still 7 strokes back. I was really feeling that Rory McIlroy was in position to have a really good Sunday like he usually does. He makes a push on a Sunday because that's when he has his best rounds, but he's usually out of reach. Yeah. But instead, he went the other direction, probably because he was in striking distance.
Yeah, that was surprising to see. Usually, that's exactly that mode where you get that backdoor top 10 from Rory. Like no matter how crappy his form is for 3 days, it seemed like he would keep himself in the mix, and he did not. My picks overall, I had Davis Riley again. I'm riding that train, Mike, because he has been red hot. We're not going to be surprised when he wins his first tournament on the PGA Tour. He's had a slew of top tens in the last month or two. He was my best pick, but the odd one was Hideki Matsuyama, who was quickly escorted off the golf course on Thursday, Mike. I don't know if you saw this, but an interesting situation unfolded. They deemed his club to be non-conforming. He had some sort of markings like on the exact center of the club face that were deemed illegal, and then he just got straight up DQ'd and kicked off the course, and his week was over fast.
Yeah, this is the equivalent of, you know, keeping some tar on you when you're throwing the baseball.
Little pine tar scandal here on the PGA Tour.
This is pretty bad. I mean, this happened really fast, and it was surprising that maybe he got to play as much as he did.
Well, it's weird because it's like, okay, I guess so really the markings are for what, after the fact you look at the club to see where you hit it on the face? Is that what's going on? Because it's not like when he's looking down at the three wood, you can't see the actual like markings you're making on the club face to like help center it. I didn't understand what's going on there.
Which I guess you're actually allowed to have a marking so you can center it as long as it doesn't come in contact with the ball or where the ball would hit on the face in any way. So you could have like a mark on the top of the club.
Right.
But because of his markings being in a place that would come in contact with the ball, that's why he was DQ'd and kicked off.
That was an interesting one. I know I always got to mention the weird disqualifications in the PGA Tour, and that was another strange one.
Supposedly, though, he usually has something on his club. I think I remember reading that this is the worst offense he's had, but he's had a history of having some sort of material on his club.
Too far with the white Sharpie, Mike, you know, he couldn't resist temptation,
which is too bad. So I'm sure he'll fix that for the next time. Let's talk about the LPGA because they had a major this week. It was the U.S. Women's Open at Pine Needles, and Minjae Lee just held onto this one almost from the start. And claimed a record $1.8 million payday.
Yes.
And her second major victory.
Shout out to the USGA for the equity there. Getting it right with the purse for the U.S. Women's Open. I know we'd highlighted that story, and then that fully came to fruition when I saw those winning numbers. And Mina Haragai finishing second, that $1 million is going to like absolutely change her life and her status on tour as well, too. So I noticed those numbers, and thank you for reiterating that. That was really cool to see. Ladies in the U.S. Open getting pretty much exactly what the guys are. So that was a neat headline to see at the end of the day Sunday after Minjae Lee just rolled to victory.
She really did. You know, she maybe didn't do anything super fantastic on Sunday other than just playing well enough to as well as everybody else did on Sunday, which was maybe the storyline. No one seemed to be able to touch it. It was your typical Sunday at a major. And she almost had a little Scottie Scheffler moment on 18 where she kind of missed that really short putt. And I was a little worried.
Nice to have seven putts for the win, right? Yeah.
Exactly. I thought we were going to have a Scottie Scheffler, you know, five putt victory.
No, great victory there. Shout out to Minjae Lee, indeed. Friend of the show and past guest Cheyenne Knight finished just outside the top 10. Saw Nelly Korda get back and have a backdoor top 10 in her own right, coming off that blood clot, a leave of absence. So good to see her back as well, too. But it was interesting looking at highlighting both those tours, Mike. Not a whole lot of Sunday drama on the golf course, specifically with those events, but a whale full of drama off the golf course with all the LIV Tour news this week.
That's right. We had our special hot take moment on Wednesday when we dropped a little short extra podcast.
Yeah, go back and listen to that, too, if you haven't yet.
Go back and listen to that, because we're not going to rehash everything. But basically, the thing to realize here is that Dustin Johnson doesn't care about where the money comes from. He just cares that he gets money.
Yeah, he's just a cash machine right now, raking in an alleged $125-150 million offer. So that was a big fish. And then all of a sudden on Monday, the news drops in gargantuan fashion. We were wondering what was going to happen with Phil Mickelson and what the future of his game.
What was
going
to happen? We knew. We were just waiting for them to tell
but
us.
When? But when? And the answer is now. Phil Mickelson is not only going to the LIV Tour, he's going now, and he's playing this week in the first event, which was really the suddenness of the headline.
Yeah, I'm not too surprised. I mean, we knew they had held five names back, and some of them were going to be for those who qualified from the Asian circuit that needed one more weekend. Yep. And we knew that there was one more spot there, most likely for Phil. And he's coming. He put out a statement as well where he said, you know, I've made a lot of mistakes and I've had a lot of time to self-reflect, and I think I'm a better person for it. And I can't wait to go play in London. You know, it's just it's kind of a crock, really. You know, it's a crock of shit. It's like You're going to go play. You're going to get paid. I don't know how much Phil's getting paid because we know he put a ton of money into this.
I was going to ask for your guess because I'm hearing 200. Yeah. I'm hearing 200 on Phil. That's what
you
I'm
think
hearing.
He's getting 200 million? Do we know how much he put in to the LIV?
That's an interesting question.
and it's like, it's kind of interesting how this all is going down.
It is. It's fascinating because it's really actually going to test the rigors of PGA Tour policy makers, how golf shakes out and golf bodies interact with one another. We're testing and pulling at a lot of those rubber bands right now, and they're being stretched out when things like Phil Mickelson, names like Phil Mickelson and now Ricky Fowler are committing to playing in events on this new tour as well. Those bombshells dropped on Monday. So it definitely is testing the relationships. The funny one we got to get to before we mention El Tigre is Kevin Na. Mike, how mm-hmm. did you feel about your boy, Kevin Na? We dropped the news that he was going to live tour, but I'm really referring to the resignation tweet that he put out. What are your thoughts on that? Well,
you know, he didn't want to risk having to pay any money to the PGA Tour, so he took that check and he walked it straight into the bank like he does with his putts.
Yes.
So that's really what it was there. You know, the question of all this, and this is what came up at the time too, shortly after he announced his resignation, is what if the LIV Tour bombs and in 2 years it's gone? What is he going to do? Can he go back to the PGA Tour?
Yeah, you wonder what that looks like. I mean, we were wondering for the last couple months, what would it look like if Phil Mickelson came back on his bended knee and apologized to the PGA Tour? Okay, well, that's going to be put on hold for a bit. But at this moment, if there's a moment when this tour does fold or collapse or not work out the way they thought it was, will these players just come crawling back and be welcomed back with open arms? That's the real question we're going to be watching as this thing gets off the ground.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I don't know if I really want to watch, you know, five times a year to see Phil lose to DJ. So, I mean, we get that on the PGA Tour already every week. So I don't know how people and Ricky's playing so poorly. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how many of the DP World players and Asian Tour players that are coming over here are able to beat Ricky in the LIV. So
I know. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. There will be world ranking points available, though. So it's a tournament after all. It's going to go down starting this weekend. The brand new format as well will be on display. There's all sorts of particulars. The Tiger offer, by the way, allegedly, I heard the word enormous and I saw ginormous as well, like ungodly enormous. Maybe $1 billion was thrown at Tiger Woods, which he obviously doesn't need to take. He didn't need the money and he wouldn't have, but wild world to think that was an actual offer on the table. Crazy stuff. From the
you know, Tiger's had enough controversy in his life. I don't think any amount of money would be enough for him to get into
he would say the same thing as I would right now. He's too old and tired for all that right now.
As didn't manage their money right or don't have the right investment set up or whatever after they've made millions and millions of dollars on tour and want to get, you know, another $100-200 million to go buy another boat. Okay, if that's where your priorities are, go ahead and take the money and live with that on your conscience that you're taking it from a regime that kills people for speaking out. Go ahead. In the meantime, Tiger Woods is going to relax in his three yachts in his multiple homes, and he's going to, you know, play four events a year when he plays in the majors, and he's going to be fine. So there you go.
And always be welcome back with open arms, for sure. Yeah, so that's an interesting drama we're going to be following throughout the week. Interesting events unfolding for the LIV Tour. Hey, Mike, real quick, you were perusing the website, and you saw that there's a little bit of music festival action going on to accompany this event, where some sort of pre-party, and it sounded like a good little list of artists there.
They're doing après golf instead of
golf.
So, you know, in their effort to revolutionize the experience for fans, they're doing free concerts every night if you bought a ticket. Concerts, you know. So, you know, I'm not that big in the music scene. I don't know a lot of these names. But let's run down the list anyway. On Thursday night, we got James Morrison and James Bay.
Pretty solid talent there. Not gonna lie.
Yeah. On Friday, we got John Newman and Craig David.
Oh, yeah. That's some very upbeat pop music coming your way. Craig David, not quite relevant in 2022. Maybe in 2002, that would have been like an unbelievable get, but a little bit cheaper now these days.
Mm-hmm. And then on Saturday, we finish out with a DJ set from Melanie C and then Jesse J.
Okay, Jesse J, pretty talented. Hey, listen, I'm not gonna lie, decent job by the Live team putting that lineup together. I don't know how they got all these artists on board here, but boy, if the pomp and circumstance of this whole dog and pony show this week tells you nothing more than money talks, then I don't know what does. This is quite a show. We'll see what it all amounts to, but it's quite a show leading up. We'll see what the final product is.
Can we talk about one other thing with the LIV tour? We were looking as well at like how much it costs to go to this thing. Like, yes, if you wanted to go and play, which they seem to be handing out free tickets because I think no one was actually going. And if you plugged in like a player's name and 20 into a promo code thing, you got like a free ticket. It's crazy. Like unlimited free tickets, it looks like it was doing. So you could pay like $80 to get a day pass to go watch.
Major championship price right there for a different day pass.
Or you could pay like $7,000 to be inside the ropes with Kevin Na.
Not just anybody. You're saying with Kevin Na, huh? Wow. Okay.
I mean, if you're going to walk with someone, then you want to walk with Kevin Na. I don't know. So the question to me is, because the LIV is saying how they want to revolutionize the fan experience and they want to make it better for everyone who's there, is
everyone.
It's everyone. You know, it's great.
Right. That's the keyword.
When you make things so expensive that only the top 1% can enjoy them, you're not really making the game and the players more approachable and available.
Right.
You're
in really theory, not. what you do is you lower the price of that experience, you limit the number of tickets you're selling, and then maybe if you're maybe 1,500 fans on the course the entire day, you get that front row access on every hole.
Yeah, or you do a lottery or something so you get more people in there, like they do with the Masters. Or the Masters is this incredible experience, and the tickets are cheap.
$75, Mike, for that Tuesday ticket.
You got it.
That's the face
value. You got to win the lottery. You got to win the lottery, but tickets are cheap. Yep. So
$75 on the ticket, it says. Yeah. So
there you go.
Crazy.
So that's the LIV. Will, I don't know if I'm going to watch this weekend. I got a wedding I got to go to. So
exciting.
I don't know if I really want to put eyeballs on something getting this much money from a violent regime that kills people. But we'll see what happens. And, you know, we'll be talking about it anyway next week. But the thing that I think we're going to be talking about a lot more is where we're going to have, Scottie Scheffler, Cam Smith, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, and Sam Burns playing. And that is the RBC Canadian Open.
Oh, so the PGA Tour is still going on. That's good to know. Oh, okay, good. I was nervous.
So we're 2 years later, Rory McIlroy returns as defending champion.
Yep. After absolutely mauling the field, he won by like 7 shots. This is at St. George's as well. This course here, mm-hmm. just outside the Toronto metro area. We're going to get a lot of Toronto shots this week from the TV cast. This will be interesting because we are sitting right on the throngs of US Open week. This is a little bit of a Parkland style course from the research I've done for my runyourpool.com article, which you can see on that website there every weekly. But it's going to be an interesting watch because again, you're in that spot right before a major where it's like, guys are tuning things. Do they want to win the Canadian Open? Or are they just getting their game right for Brookline and have eyes on next week? So it's always interesting to see how these pre-major weeks play out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. It is certainly a very loaded field
good
because
field.
It's just where it is in the lineup. So, you know, this certainly has a lot more firepower than what's going to be happening across the pond. And, you know, I just think it's also just kind of interesting that there's already going to be a lot of controversy and talk going on with this week's tournament. But of course, then you have the marquee RBC, former RBC spokesperson
what timing,
who's not
going to
be there. So
I didn't
DJ,
think about that. Yeah.
So DJ would have been headlining this event as the, the title player maybe from the sponsor. And now he's nowhere to be seen. So
I mean, this is a message to any one of those top tier PGA Tour stars. RBC has an opening right now and they got the funds. So if you want a sponsor, hit them up this week.
That's true. They're looking for people to think differently.
Yes, that's right. Well done.
So we'll have our full picks out on Wednesday on Twitter. We'll see if we can get back in the winner's circle because we keep knocking on the door here, and one of us has got to get a winner here soon. So we shall see. For right now, let's talk about let's get back into the book club. Let's talk about Phil.
Yep, I'm grabbing my book right now.
It's just an interesting dichotomy for us to be learning more about Phil Mickelson as he now separates from the PGA Tour and in the chapters 2, 3, and 4 from the book that we're reading, Phil, the unauthorized biography. He's just, man, he's a hot-headed, confident player as a kid, isn't he?
Yeah, and also the best, so that helps when you're hot-headed, confident, and you're amazing. So that's quite a combo to grow up with, and it's very apparent in these chapters that it's just all about Phil just being a superior being, Mike. He's just on a different plane than us, you know? He's just thinking about things differently, and that came from a very young age, you know, being a lefty and first swinging clubs as a lefty and taking up the game as a lefty. He immediately sought out all the advantages of being a lefty and how it's so much smarter to play golf as a lefty. So really just the theme that's resonating, and you can go any direction with the different tidbits that we heard in these three chapters. But really the theme is Phil Mickelson is holier than thou, and we shouldn't even touch him, basically.
Yeah, I particularly like the story where he was playing in advance the Tucson Open, which he won as an amateur.
Yes.
And he went out there and found Gary McCord out on the golf course, and for three holes said, hey, why don't we switch clubs and I'll play righty, you play lefty, we'll do $100 a hole. And of course, Gary McCord didn't know at the time that Phil was a righty.
Right.
Phil
yes.
went ahead and took $300 off him and probably went out to dinner. So.
Oh, surprising. Phil snaking money out of someone. That's never going to happen again. We won't have to worry about that coming up again, unfortunately. Yeah, always the showman. Prodigy kid growing up is what we learned. I especially appreciated the little CEO, Phil, basically giving his speeches after he won junior golf tournaments. Like, Mike, you understand the atmosphere in those junior golf tournaments. Like, you get your name called up the few times that I did, and you just like shake a person's hand and you get one picture with the trophy, then you walk off. Phil took that to the extreme. He decided that was his podium and basically treated every junior golf championship like a green jacket winning.
Yeah, if there's anything, as if we didn't already know, especially over the last couple of years with Twitter and Phil's kind of resurgence maybe into the social space, is that Phil really loves the spotlight in every way. So it's just really interesting to see him as a kid too, and trying to figure it all out, and that he can't hold his liquor. So,
oh yeah, shout out John Daly for unearthing that. Yeah, so that's really the key, is if you just want to go to the truth serum, or if you want to beat Phil Mickelson on the course, you got to slip him a couple of drinks and just get him going on the sauce, because he gets too lost in it. He can't drink and play. That came through as well too. Let's see, cocky Phil in the early amateur days, the Walker Cup, kind of the precedent for amateur golfers and their version of the Ryder Cup. There were a lot of fun stories there about him just absolutely dominating. And I think that kind of sets up maybe the way Phil acted on future Ryder Cup teams as well, which I know we're going to get into as time goes on in this book. But that was interesting to highlight again, just how just aggressively cocky he was. And it just vibrated through him in his formative years.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to continue to dive through this book. You know, it's such an easy page turner too. For those of you that are worried, that think you can't catch up to us at this point, now that we're on chapter 5.
Yeah, we're not far. Yeah.
Go get Shipnook's book and catch up with us, and we'll read it all together.
And last but not least, the shock of the century, Mike. This was completely off script for Phil Mickelson's life. How on earth did he stay in school for one more year? I can't believe I get he wanted the college experience, and we loved our college experience in our own way, but that was amazing to me that he didn't grab that PGA Tour money right in front of him and decided to stick it out for one more at Arizona State.
Well, you know, I love the line that was in the book where he said he only would have won $180,000 and lots more money coming his way on the PGA Tour, but you're only in college once.
Yep, that's right. That was chapters 2 through 4 right there. And Phil, it's the rip-roaring and unauthorized biography of golf's most colorful superstar by Alan Shipnook. Chapters 2 through 4 in the book. You can catch up and read it with us. Next week, we'll do the next three chapters.
Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. I finally found a 3-hour chunk where I was able to sit down and watch The Batman.
Oh, okay. So we've got a review incoming. What were your thoughts?
I thought it was good. I didn't think it was fantastic. you know, I'm still very much a fan of the Christian Bale Batman. That's what I'm used to. Yeah. However, this Batman was much more in kind of that crime noir detective Batman that we've seen sometimes as well, and was less gadget heavy and more about him as trying to figure out the case. So I appreciated that. I thought it was good. Did it need to be 3 hours long? No. I actually felt as I watched this movie that this would have been great as like a 6-part miniseries. That it would have done really well as like a six episode series. And it would have done this great arc, and you would have been, it just would have felt better to me.
Yeah. The 3 hours is a little bit tedious on the timeline there, but sounds like a good review. How many stars out of five, Mike? What'd you give it?
3.5.
Okay. 3.5. Batman. Love it. Nice. My tuned in is I'm tuned into the internet for myself. A very interesting thing happened this past weekend, Mike. I don't know if you saw, I had my day out on the lake. It was my first time water tubing in probably at least 10, maybe 15 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I posted a clip on that Course of Life Alex on Instagram of the end of my ride. I held on amazingly. I was getting compliments from everyone in the boat, but every ride does come to an end. My arms wore down and I got thrown across a wave that I could not defeat, no matter how much inertia I put on one side. And it was quite the wipeout. So I didn't really think much of it, but I got a random contact from an agency. And I won't say the name of the agency because they're doing the job, but an agency that is actually going to start shopping this clip. They work with shows like Ridiculousness on MTV and all sorts of viral clip accounts across the internet. And essentially, there's no skin off my back. Basically, they're just going to try and make me some money and make this clip grow viral. Well, I didn't think it was that impressive of a clip, but I watched it and the wipeout was pretty cool looking. So if you want to watch me wipe out and let me know if this is going to go viral or not, check it out on Instagram at Course of Life Alex.
Interesting. Very interesting.
It is. I don't know, Mike. Is this going to be like a $2.46 royalty check in like a few months, or am I going to retire in a few?
What's the cut that this company's taking from you?
They're taking 40. I'm taking 60.
Okay. You might see 250. This might get you half a cup of coffee.
Okay. All right. I mean, if I can get a cup of coffee a month off of this clip of me falling ass first into the water of a tube, it's all worth it, right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go. For now, let's get into this week's guest. We're stepping outside of the world of sports so we can hear from an actor who's also a musician. He's got new music out, and he once had the opportunity to play Tarzan in Vegas.
Yeah, Tarzan in a live production, like swinging through the crowd, like over the crowd. That's pretty crazy in and of itself. And Scott Mulligan, this week's guest, is here to tell that story of what that experience was like. Really cool guy with a lot of neat experiences. Boston connection as well. We get into all things Boston and even a live performance coming your way, too. So stick around for this.
Can't wait. We'll get to that chat with Scott in just a moment. But first, as always, let's talk about the Volvic golf ball. It's the most colorful golf ball out there on the course. It comes in both a bunch of different varieties, including the XT Soft and the Vivid. Bright colors and a great play for the ball. The XT Soft is a three-piece tour-ready golf ball. It gives you explosive distance and accurate greenside control. And the Vivid is great with less spin off the driver for straighter tee shots, more feel around the greens for lower scores. And of course, we know that lower scores means more fun. And bright colors mean more fun, too, because you're going to stick out from the pack. You're going to feel like you're special. Volvic doesn't spend their money on big marketing from tour players. They spend it on guys like us, and then they put the rest into their high-performance golf balls. So head on over to their website. It's volvic.com, VOLVIK.com. Check out the XT Soft, the Vivid, everything else they've got there, merchandise, towels, accessories for the course, and some other really cool collectibles, plus great gift ideas for the golfers in your life. Performance in color, Volvic has a ball for every swing.
Next up from out in LA, we have an actor, model, and musician with some new music out now and a once-in-a-lifetime role to his credit as well, too. It's Scott Mulligan joining us on The Course of Life. Scott, how's everything going where you are?
Going amazing, man. How are you?
Very, very good. Yeah, I'm glad we got the chance to connect via Instagram, and here we are chatting today. Excited to feature you and talk a little bit about your background. I'm curious kind of how it all began for you. You wear a lot of different hats right now, between music, acting, modeling, whatnot, and everything you do, which people can follow on social. But how did it all begin for you growing up? Were your first moments of performing music-based, performance, modeling? Where did your story begin?
Man, so if you watch the music video for my song Home, you can see the home video footage.
Yes, did see a quick of that.
Yeah. And if you watch the clip at the very end, actually, my mom's cutting my hair in her beauty shop, and she's saying, "Scott's gonna be a movie star," and I'm pretending like I'm Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone, and it really started then when I just started trying to be the lead actor in every show that I saw, whether it was Home Alone or, you know, whatever movie I was watching at that time. I tried to memorize every single word, every single song. And it's literally, I believe it's been born into me.
Very cool. And so just to confirm, you grew up in what, the Pacific Northwest? Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Suburb outside of Seattle.
Okay. What were the opportunities? I know in kind of different cities, different parts of the country and the world, opportunities for performance and theater are different. What were those opportunities like for you growing up?
So there wasn't a lot because I wanted to get into TV and film at a young age, but you know, Washington State doesn't really have it. You have to be in New York, LA, or Georgia. So I got my first start in a church musical, actually, was casted as a lead, had to memorize lots of songs, lots of lines. And then that transitioned into being the lead in all the high school musicals. And then after that, I went on to study musical theater at the Boston Conservatory at Berkeley. Then that's when I got Tarzan.
Very, very cool. Yeah, I want to ask about Berkeley. Anyone who's from the Boston area, which is where myself and my co-host grew up, know that is an unbelievably high-level program to get into. The Conservancy,
yes.
and Berkeley itself, very well known for producing amazing talent just all over every bit of the entertainment industry. Tell everyone about kind of that, the acceptance getting into Berkeley and what that experience was like for you.
Oh, man. So I had to do 2 songs, a dance routine, 2 monologues, and interviews. It was the whole 9, you know? It was similar to what I had to do to book Tarzan. So, you know, Boston Conservatory puts out Broadway caliber talent. Catherine McPhee went there, Constantine Maroulas.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just trying to follow in all their footsteps, you know? So it's a wonderful program. They have a cut system. 2 years into the program, they cut about half the class. So it went from like 70 kids to like 30 my senior year. So I made it through the cut program, got my BFA, got an emphasis in songwriting too. So the songwriting began in college. Then that slowly transitioned into me becoming a recording artist right after Tarzan.
Very cool. So I'm curious, before we do talk about that role, best and worst parts of Boston for you, coming as a transplant from the Pacific Northwest, I'm curious what you liked and didn't about the city.
Dude, that snow is no joke. I had to unbury my car so many times.
It's bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it's bad. It's cold.
That's why I moved to Texas, man.
Right? That's why I'm in LA in the high desert, because, you know, I'd rather have 100 degrees than freeze my face off.
Amen. Yeah. Very cool. But so that was the worst part. What was the best part about the city?
Dude, the best part would be the people. I've never been in a town where there's so many colleges all in one area. So, you know, I was able to take classes at Berkeley, at Boston Conservatory, go to the Northeastern Cafe for all my meals, hang out with all those guys. So I was able to like be spread across multiple people groups and learn a lot from that experience.
Very cool. Yeah, it's a great city indeed, especially at that point in your life. Let's talk about that amazing once-in-a-lifetime role that I mentioned, booking Tarzan. First, let's talk about the audition process to be part of a Tarzan live production and just kind of maybe what you knew and what your frame of reference was for Tarzan going into the audition.
Absolutely. So when I moved to LA, I started growing my hair out and people were like, hey, you look like Tarzan. Someone literally said that to me. And then I said, that's so funny you said that because I just auditioned for the show and I really hope I get it. And so, you know, I ended up booking the show, had to do multiple scenes, some dancing, and really Tarzan flips and jumps around a lot. I was at a theater right outside of Vegas in St. George, Utah, called the Tuacon Amphitheater. And it kind of looks like the Red Rock Amphitheater, surrounded by enormous red rocks.
It's a very neat venue, yeah.
You literally feel like you're in the jungle. And on opening night, it actually rained, and the steam was coming off the stage. And it was like that tropical, humid type rain. So you felt like you were in the jungle. And on that night, they actually couldn't do the flight system. So my grand entrance onto the stage was they lifted me like 70, 80 feet in the air from behind the rocks. And then the spotlight comes down on me onto the stage. And then they flood the stage. They have the technology to flood the stage because it was Disney Theatrical Productions put it on at Tuacon. So they invested a lot into the show, but it was epic. It was an incredible experience. I was hanging upside down over 3,000 people a night. Had my claim to fame, my first shirtless Vegas billboard they gave me.
Oh, yes. What an iconic moment that is. Love it. Yeah.
Right. Oh, that's pretty dope. So, that was a great experience after college to land upon, and that set me up to do music too.
Very cool. What was that practice and dedication level like, the swinging, flipping and jumping that you refer to? What the amount of work and hours that went into rehearsing, what kind of went into that people don't see behind the scenes?
So it was really interesting because I was just talking to my friend about this, and when you perform on a big stage, the amount of breath support and calculation that you have to have is very, very hard to do because I had to run sometimes from the stage up a huge flight of stairs to the back of the auditorium to get into my flight system to fly down again and then sing a song right after. So it took me about 2 months to figure out how to breathe properly and when to breathe and when to maintain and slow down in order to get through 8 Phil Collins songs.
Yes. A feat in and of it itself too. Very cool to see. And yeah, it's Tarzan Live was a really neat production to kind of read all about and seeing what you did. And that venue, you're right, really does stick out.
Absolutely.
It's so unique. Again, Scott Mulligan joining us here on The Course Life. So that was a really cool experience that I wanted to highlight. And I do want to transition to your music, your other act, if you will. And you mentioned that it had been music for a while because it's something you'd obviously picked up and got really into in your time in Berkeley. What went into the decision maybe to focus more attention to it specifically at this time in your life?
Well, when I was doing Tarzan, I would be backstage and be writing songs because I was recording an EP at the time at a local studio. And that's when I met an amazing music producer named Sam Harmonix, who's out here with me in LA now. He is the main producer for Jamie Foxx, just produced some stuff on Snoop Dogg's new album.
Nice.
And he's the one of the best in the industry. And so I told him what I was doing. He saw everything that was going on during Tarzan. And I sent him the music I was working on. He's like, hey, we can take it to the next level. You know, just hold off on releasing that. Come to North Carolina. Let's work on an album. So right after Tarzan, I flew to North Carolina and I devoted myself to the music business for about a year or two. And I was teaching a little bit there, and that was a cool experience. Was a music teacher at a high school while I was recording the album. And 2 years after that, that's when I made the big move to LA.
Very neat. So I guess kind of moving out there, obviously knew you're making that full-time commitment to music. In terms of your sound, for people who haven't heard your music yet, describe your sound and what you want your sound to be as well, too.
Absolutely. You know, I feel that's one of the hardest questions for musicians is like, what's your genre? What's your sound? At least it is for me, because
yeah, you span across a few of them as well, too. I've seen a lot of different vibes in your music. So,
so last night was my opening night at Main Row in Hollywood, which is a incredible venue. If you guys ever are in Hollywood, in Los Angeles, there's two other locations in Miami. But it really has that Miami club vibe. So I sung six songs last night. The first two songs were like show tunes, classical Broadway standards. The second set, I sung some Prince. I did Kiss. And then I closed out with Nirvana Smells Like Teen Spirit. So, you know, I span from Broadway and classical music to rock and roll to pop. And that's what I incorporate in my original music. So you'll hear, you know, slow indie pop records on my album. You'll hear Imagine Dragons type records. You'll hear some trappy stuff like Post Malone. So it's really a mixture of new stuff and old stuff, but it's true to myself and what I do and what I love. You know, I love that high 80s tenor rock sound like Aerosmith. You'll hear the high notes throughout my music. You'll hear the grit and the rasp, and then you'll hear the really soft side. My musical theater tone, I call it.
Yeah, and you know what, Scott? Your performance really echoes through in your music. I can see as well, too. So that really resonates as well, which is very unique. A couple songs I wanted to get into. The first one, maybe a little bit more on that Imagine Dragons vibe. I'm referring to Do What You Want, which is kind of like a little, to me, it's a little bit of like a Moment of Rebellion song. But tell me what went into making that track.
Man, this was like during the time when we kind of had a lot more rules going on. And there were so many debates about what people can and can't do, and everyone has their own opinion. And you know, I'm just like, you know what, I'm not taking one side or the other. You know, I'm gonna do what I want to do, say what I want to say. You know, it's okay to have an opinion, because everyone has an opinion, and just because you have one doesn't mean you're wrong or you should be criticized for it. Like one of the lines is, opinions don't mean they're right. Look out for the guys that hide facts and tell lies when theories come alive. Point out what's in plain sight, bring truth to light. It's like, you know, just point out the facts, point out what's there.
Yeah.
And make these decisions for yourself.
I appreciate that message. It definitely resonated. That was a cool track that caught my ear. And the other one I wanted to mention as well, too, for people who aren't already looking at your YouTube, and I'm Scott Mulligan on Instagram, is Coastline. Kind of a little bit more of the sensitive side, maybe a little bit more of thinking about the girl you're going to take on a date music. But tell me about your favorite Coastline memories and vibes that obviously went into writing the song.
Dude, that was about the girl with the 617 Boston area code.
Oh, there it was. It all comes back to Boston, doesn't it?
It does. So I have some bad memories and good memories there. But
it fostered some music, so that's what counts.
It fostered a lot of music. Fostered Spider-Man, it fostered Coastline. So Coastline is actually a true story of when I drove cross-country to try to save that relationship.
Mm. Very cool. Awesome.
And, in the music video, you'll see the good memories. And then all of a sudden at the end, if you really pay attention, all those memories I'm reenacting, but she's not there.
Yeah, it's a very, very, very well done video too. Love whoever helped work with you put the imagery together and the visualization came out very nicely. So,
Igor Volkov is my go-to video guy.
Just gonna say shout them out for sure. Yeah, awesome.
Absolutely.
Nice.
But it gives that kind of melancholy, driving down the Pacific Coast Highway, like, Lana Del Rey vibes,
Yep. Just sink into your thoughts and enjoy the moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it feels good too. You know what I mean? It's not like a depressing song. It's just like, let me just feel good. Let me feel love. Let me reminisce of what that's like,
Very cool. Yeah. Everyone check out the music if you haven't already. Again, it's I'm Scott Mulligan on Instagram. Let's get to some quick shot questions now. A few different random things that you can help on for our audience. One, is a tip for you, and it could be really in any facet that maybe anyone can add to their exercise regimen to help results. One random thing that I've done recently is I started stretching before and after my workouts, and I've noticed a lot of difference in my flexibility. I can tell you spend a lot of time working on your body. What's a good tip out there for everyone?
Absolutely. Well, I'm actually 4 weeks out from my very first bodybuilding competition. I'm doing men's physique at Center Podium for
NBC. So you're in full prep season right now, I guess.
I'm in full prep season, and man, is it different. Yeah. And I would say out of anything that I've learned, because I've tried all the diets. I've done keto. I've done intermediate fasting. Done all. But it's always been a struggle for me. So the key to weight loss and getting in shape and keeping the muscle and burning the fat is, they say consistency is key. It's meal consistency, eating every 2 to 3 hours on the clock, six times a day, and preparing those meals as meal prep if you don't have time to cook each one of them separately.
Yeah.
And setting your alarm and packing, it's embarrassing. I pack a big lunchbox everywhere I go. Like at the show last night, people were like, what are you doing? I'm like, can you heat my meal up? Do you have a microwave? if I'm out, I'll go to a gas station and literally heat my turkey and rice.
Yeah.
Because that's how disciplined you have to be to achieve these kind of results. And when you have a plan and follow it and you're consistent, that's always been my struggle, being consistent with something. I'll start, get some momentum, and then not see the progress I want or something, then fall back. Then I just have to start over again. And, now's the season in my life where I'm trying to erase those bad habits and keep that momentum going and moving forward.
Definitely. Okay. I like that commitment to the timeline on your eating. Keep it regimented. Good stuff. The next question I had regarding on stage, one word answers here for you. The first one word answer is what's your emotion right before you go on stage to perform?
Really quick, before I answer that one, I want to shout out the trainer I've been working with, Bo. Mm. You can find him on my Instagram. He's been helping me get this body. So,
shout out, Bo.
And also, the emotion that I get before I go on stage. Last night was the epitome of what I felt the first time I was lifted up into the air in Tarzan. It gave me that flashback because they lifted me up in an elevator with a fog machine way above the audience for my song last night.
Nice.
This club. Yeah. This club is epic. Like LED screens, the tables and the lights are on elevators and go up and down. You feel like you're in a spaceship, literally. And so it is nerve wracking, but I've learned to take that nervous energy and channel it into the emotion and vibe that I'm giving to the audience.
Very cool. Nice. Yeah. It's that newness. You're it's like you're experiencing it for the first time over and over again. So you definitely appreciate what you do. Nice. I see you do a lot of traveling as well too. You've been to a lot of places in the country, but I'm curious, maybe outside the US, what's maybe the next country to visit on your list?
Man, I would love to go overseas. I've never been overseas. I've been to Canada and Mexico. But if I could do some shows in Europe and stuff, that will be my next stop.
Yeah, I haven't done the Europe trip either. So that is on my list, right? As well. I guess tell everyone about, just so they know, where they can find your music and where the current residency you're doing is at.
Yes, yeah, so you can find my music on any streaming platform. I always point people towards Spotify because I'm always encouraging people to add my music to their Spotify playlists. But I'm also on Apple Music, Amazon. And if you want to listen to it for free, YouTube, SoundCloud, all that jazz.
Love it. Scott, thank you so much for hopping on The Course of Life. Appreciate it. We are going to take everyone away with some acoustic sounds from Scott right here. So without further ado, Scott Mulligan.
Perfect. So this is an unreleased original that may be released soon. It's called Human Condition.
Right now I cannot see what's in the looking glass, but right now I could agree something that just don't last. Well, I've been through hell and back, but it never seems to end, no. Right now I'm blinded by my own sense of pretend. I keep falling head over heels, and I keep running from what is real. It's all delusion, intoxicating pain. It's the human condition, it's a curse to my brain. Right now, I don't know who I really am, but what I do know now is everywhere I've been. I've crossed the seven seas and I made it to the end, yeah. I think I'm captain now, I'm sailing to God. Head over heels, and I keep running from what is real. It's all that's illusion, intoxicating pain. It's the human condition, it's a curse to my brain.
There he is, Scott Mulligan. Thank you so much. That was amazing. Looking forward to all that your music provides in the future, and best of luck out there.
And catch me live at Main Row in Hollywood. I forgot to add that to the Spotify.
Shout out Main Row. We will see you there.
Let's go. Thanks, man.
And we're back. Great chat there with Scott. Really exciting to see the birth of the Course of Life podcast concert series.
Oh, yeah. Is that what you're calling it? You're giving it the billing? I mean, I kind of like it. It's like you know, big time MTV Unplugged vibes there from Scott. And I appreciated the performance at the end. Yeah, I am definitely, next time I go to LA, I'm going to Main Row. I want to see him perform. He's posted some videos on his Instagram. Check out I'm Scott Mulligan for more of his content from his shows. You'd appreciate this venue, Mike, because it's like an upscale, like supper club venue, and you just get the show like as the night goes on. So you're just getting fed this amazing food, drink whatever you want to drink, and you just get the show like from your comfy table. You know what I mean? No mob scene concert, really elegant spot. So check out Scott there and follow him for all his upcoming content and music as well.
And if you like that conversation with Scott and the concert we got as well, plus everything else that we do here on the podcast, make sure you subscribe on the podcast app of your choice. Leave us a rating and a comment. Let us know we're doing well or even when we're not doing well. We'll work on improving it for you if we think it has merit, which it probably doesn't because we're the best and y'all should deal with it. And you can follow us on Instagram, COL Podcast, Course of Life, Alex, MWRINC. We're on Twitter as well. He's Course of Life One on Twitter, and I'm MWRINC.
Yeah, cool. Let's talk. We talked a little Boston in the conversation with Scott there, but we got to check in on the Celtics, Mike. It's getting real nitty gritty right now after a Sunday night loss, all tied up 1-1, heading into Wednesday night's game three back in Boston, back at the Garden for two. So far, it's been basically just one fourth quarter beating from the Celtics and just an all out schlubbing from the Warriors. A draw at this point.
Yeah, I mean, was the fourth quarter bludgeoning that the Celtics gave the Warriors in game one, was that an oddity, do you think? Or was game two the oddity?
You know what? I actually do. I'll admit, I think the game one fourth quarter was the oddity, because when did the Warriors get outscored by 24 points on their own gym in the fourth quarter? So, but that's fine, because the nature of the series is we just had to take one of the first two in Golden State. So mission accomplished. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it was ugly, pretty, or an anomaly or not. They got one of the first two. Now the job is, can you win two in Boston this week? We'll see. That'd be huge if they get the 3-1. Otherwise, we're just back at square one in a 2-2 series when we have this conversation next week. But nonetheless, a very competitive finals to start.
Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes. Brought to you by Toasty Bites, toasty.com/COL. We're going to do a fun thing that is unscripted and unplanned. Are you ready, sir?
Oh, goodness. Okay. Yeah.
Sure. Mini drafts are always in with food podcast, which we do from time to time. We love doing little food drafts. So we're going to do a quick one on the spot. Mike, it's going to be 100 degrees or higher every single day this week in Austin, Texas. Mm. Every single day we're above 100 degrees. So we're going just a top three, and I'll let you pick first. Summer cool down drinks. We've drafted this before, but we're coming back at it about a year later. Mike, what are your go-tos on a triple digit day?
You want all three, or you want me to just
go ahead and give
one
me your
right
first
now?
Round pick? What do you got?
I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go with a iced tea.
Nice pick. All right, I gotta go iced coffee. Take that off the board. What do you like in round two?
I'm gonna go full Arnold Palmer here. Let's go lemonade.
Ah, nice work there, man. Jeez. Okay, this is the moment when I may go with like a lemon lime Gatorade. So I'll take that off the board. What would be your third and final summer cool down drink?
I'm gonna go with like a cola, you know, Coke, Dr. Pepper, something like that.
Okay, and I'll take the slushy from 7-Eleven. Those are the freaking best on a hot day. So that was a little mini draft right there, but it's gonna be a lot of that for me this week. Like I said, triple digits for at least the next week. If there's any consolation, the golf courses are empty, so I can go play golf. I'll just sweat 5 pounds off every round. So
there you go, good weight loss program exactly. Right there. Yeah. This week, I did do some baking this week, but what I really want to talk about, though, is a restaurant that I went to. A little flip here, where usually you're the one going out to restaurants,
yeah,
Alex.
Okay. Where'd you go?
I went to the brand new place here in Savannah called Yukio. They opened like last month. They're a ramen place and Japanese street food restaurant here in Savannah. And it was hands down one of the best meals I've had in a restaurant in quite a while, quite a few years.
And before I ask what you get,
even since the before times.
Oh, so. Wow. Okay. Now I was about to say that. Yeah. That's impressive. Before I ask what you get, how about just the come up for ramen noodles? You know, from us just throwing the 50 cent pack in our dorm room freshman year to get it going on a Friday night to here we are. We just have restaurants, food trucks, and food concepts all over the country and world just highlighting ramen like crazy. So what did you get specifically?
So we started with a diver sea scallop appetizer, which was some of the best scallops either of us have ever had. And then I had a duck ramen, which had a duck confit, which was just spectacular. And the wife had a tonkatsu ramen with pork, and the broth in that one, it was a pork broth. It like hit you in the face with pork flavor. It was fantastic. Noodles were nice and chewy, had a good bite to them. Everything was just fantastic. It was a spectacular meal.
Yeah, that sounds like an all-world play there. Yukio Ramen, Savannah, Georgia. Love it. Good stuff. That was Always In With Food. That's a wrap on this week's Course of Life. Thank you to everyone for tuning in. Be sure to hit that subscribe button right now so you don't miss next week's episode. And until then, we'll see you next week.